And next on Cambridge 105, Community Radio in your city, comes Evening Under Lamplight with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson, inviting you to attend. Ascolta. And I want to welcome into the studio this evening's guest, Under Lamplight, Jenny from Edinburgh, keeping me company and joining in later on. Meanwhile, here we are in the middle of the annual December Consumerist Festival. Everyone's expected to go out shopping, helping the economy, of course, is the hype we're given. I was glad to see that the Mill Road Winter Fair last week did not partake of the consumerist spirit. There was no pressure to buy, buy, buy. It was more of a celebration than a shopping spree, and though the street was so full it almost felt unpleasant, it all felt local, with friendly people selling goods of immediate practicality, that is, food. One sign that the Mill Road Winter Fair was genuine was that there were real people there, no fake Santa Clauses, no fake Father Christmases. At least, not that I saw. I remember someone telling a group of us once that she does not let her children believe in Santa Claus because it's just a myth. I answered her, in equally sanctimonious words, no doubt, that there's nothing wrong with a myth. Myths are true on their own level. What's wrong with Santa Claus is not that it's a myth, but that it's a bad myth. It tells kids that they will get presents only if they're good. In other words, the love this myth teaches is conditional love, hitting the kids early with judgmentalism and guilt and the worst motives for doing right. It would be appropriate now, I think, to play the Kinks' 1977 song Father Christmas, a punk response to Christmas consumerism. As we might expect, the punky kids cut right through the myth to the pure greed at the heart of consumerism. But also, as we should expect, Ray Davies produces a much more complex song with a mixture of voices and tones. We begin with the familiar Ray Davies misfit speaker, who, when he was young, was an innocent, or at least polite, kid. When I was small, I believed in Santa Claus, though I knew it was my dad. That's good. The double vision that can hold on to the paradox, Santa exists, Santa is just my dad. And he opens his presents and he's glad. Simple, idyllic. But the kids now, they knock Father Christmas's reindeer to the floor and mug Father Christmas himself. They don't want presents, they just want money. That's the way things were in the late 1970s, and I'll leave you to decide whether they're like that now too. We want your bread, the punks threaten, so don't make any noise. Give all the toys to the little rich boys. Is this in the end greed or just desperation? Only rich kids can enjoy toys. The rest of the country has much more basic needs and can see through the commercial crap of Christmas toys. Don't give my brother a Steve Austin outfit. That's Steve Austin, the $6 million bionic man, a big deal then. Don't give my sister a cuddly toy. Don't want a jigsaw or Monopoly money. We only want the real McCoy. And then the kink in the song. But give my daddy a job, 'cause he needs one. He's got lots of mouths to feed. This mugging takes place in a much larger economic context, we realize, and at least these kids, rough and punky as they are, at least they understand where the real need is. And then the casual line almost thrown away, but if you've got one, I'll have a machine gun so I can scare all the kids on the street. It's like he's asking for some sweeties at the sweet shop, so polite all of a sudden. If you've got one, I'll have a machine gun, please. He just wants to show off and scare the kids. There's something innocent, or at least naive, in this boy's Christmas wish. Not so innocent and naive today, though. And then the shift to another voice, not the nasty kids speaking now, but Ray Davies himself, breaking into the song, casting a wry glance at us and wishing us a merry, merry Christmas, not by getting lots of presents, but by remembering the kids who got nothing while we're drinking down our wine. It reminds me of John Ruskin's line that the rich man cannot sit down at his feast unless he sits down blindfold. This song asks us to take off the blindfold, under threat of a mugging, of course. Then suddenly we shift back to the sweet jingling bells as the kids make their demands one more time. The song begins nice and gentle, lulling us into a false consumerist complacency. But the Christmas bells are soon interrupted by Dave's heavy guitar and Mick Avery's manic drumstick.
Presents and I'd be glad. But the last time I played Father Christmas, I stood outside a department store. A gang of kids came over and mugged me and knocked my reindeer to the floor. They said, Father Christmas, give us some money. Don't mess around with those silly toys. We'll beat you up, don't hand it over. We want your bread, so don't make us annoy. Give all the to the little rich boy. Don't give my brother a Steve Austin outfit. Don't give my sister a cuddly toy. We don't want a Jinx or a Monopoly money. We only want the real McCoy. Father Christmas, give us some money. We'll beat you up if you make us annoy. Daddy a job cause he needs one. He's got lots of mouths to feed. But if you've got one, I have a machine gun, so I can scare all the kids on the street. Father Christmas, give us some money. We got no time for your silly toys. We'll beat you up if you don't hand it over. We want your bread, so don't make us annoy. Give all the toys to the little rich boy. Have yourself a merry, merry Christmas. Have yourself a good time. But remember the kids who got nothing while you're drinking down your wine. Father Christmas, give us some money. We got no time for your silly toys. Father Christmas, please hand it over. We'll beat you up, so don't make us annoy.
Okay, that was our Christmas song from the Kinks, Father Christmas, a very strange Christmas song. And that, boys and girls, is what life was like in the days leading up to Margaret Thatcher. What bothers me, and this may just be a personal issue, is that so much of consumerist hype is so manipulative. The lure of a bargain can pull in anyone. They feed us a line and we bite. That's an image from fishing. We're as stupid as fish going for the bait on the line. Or they feed us a line and we line up to take what they're offering, or what we think they're offering, or what we think they might be offering. You'll remember I read to you a few weeks ago James Robertson's poem When the Isle Rins Oot. Here's something by James called Consumer Blues. It starts out with the puppet consumers, but ends somewhere much more disconcerting. And we're going to try something different. Jenny and I will be reading alternate sections. Say hello, Jenny. Here we are.
Oh, hi there, Robert Louis.
Hi. Now let's hope we get the beats right. This is Consumer Blues, James Robertson. There's a rumour going round. We don't know what it is, but we all get in line. Could be one thing, could be another, but we all get in line. They're probably selling something. They must be selling something, so we all get in line.
Maybe it's a bargain, maybe it's a con, but we all get in line. A pocket full of diamonds or a half pound of mince, but we all get in line. We won't know what we're missing if we turn and walk away, so we all get in line.
There's nothing more we need. The house is full of crap, but we all get in line. No room in the closets. The garage walls are bulging, but we all get in line. Someone says she's seen it. Someone says it's cool, so we all get in line.
They're chopping down the forests and slicing up the mountains, but we all get in line. Half the world is starving and living under cardboard, but we all get in line. And if they want to count our dirty carbon footprints, we'll all get in line.
There are 7 billion birthdays and Christmas round the corner, so we all get in line. Instant payday credit and a pawn shop up the alley, so we all get in line. But you never know your luck. There's a winner every minute, so we all get in line.
The country folk are leaving and moving to the city, where they all get in line. It's so hard to make a living, but they hear it can be done, so they all get in line. And we're running out of oil, and we're running out of water, so we all get in line.
There's talk of revolution and anarchy and war, and it's coming down the line. You don't know who to trust or which side to be on if it's coming down the line. But there's a man in a truck selling guns and insurance, and he's coming down the line.
And the government is saying there's a threat to law and order, but no one will get hurt, arrested or imprisoned, if we stay in line.
It can't happen here. I'm telling you, my dear, that it can happen here. Because I've been checking it out, baby. I checked it out a couple of times. And I'm telling you, it can't happen here. Oh, darling, it's important that you believe me, bop, 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 that it can't happen here. Who could imagine that they would freak out somewhere in Kansas?
Kansas, 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 Kansas,
Kansas. Who could imagine that they would freak out in Minnesota? They would freak out in Washington, D.C.
But it can't happen here.
Everybody's safe and it can't happen here. No freaks for us. It can't happen here. Everybody's clean and it can't happen here. No, no, it won't happen here. I'm telling you kids, it won't happen here. Plastic folks, you know it won't happen here. You're safe, Mama. You're safe, baby. You just cook the TV dinner and you make it. Get a TV dinner and cook it up. Cook it up. Oh, and it won't happen here.
No, man, you guys.
But they would freak out in the suburbs.
Everything's cool.
I remember, they had a swimming pool. I remember, they had a swimming pool.
and they thought it couldn't happen here. Da, 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 da. They knew it couldn't happen here. They were so sure it couldn't happen here, but...
Susie.
Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I've always felt it. Yes, I agree, man. It really makes it. Yeah. It's a real theme, man. It really makes it.
Susie, you just got to town, and we've been very interested in your development.
Forget it!
It can't happen here.
It can't happen here? No, of course not. We're just lining up for some bargain. We meant no harm, and it's not like we were the wrong color or anything. We were good citizens walking the line. We've been checking it out. Plastic folks, you know it won't happen here. You're safe, Mama. You're safe, baby. Everything's safe. Everything's okay. You just cook a TV dinner and you make it. No, no, no. You guys are really safe. You were listening to the Mothers of Invention with their song Help, I'm a Rock, Part 2, also known as It Can't Happen Here. It Can't Happen Here was the title of a 1935 political novel by Sinclair Lewis, describing what might happen in America if a populist leader got elected president and then used his power to destroy all dissent and all civil rights and to imprison anyone who speaks against the government. But that's okay, it's only fiction. It surely couldn't happen here. Before we move on, though, I want to add a word more about James Robertson's Consumer Blues. It's one story in a series of 365 little stories. But here, let James Robertson describe the project as found on the Penguin website and as read by this evening's guest, Jenny Renton.
The concept was simple enough, one story for each day of the year, written on each day of the year, each story to be exactly the same length, 365 words. So by the end of the year, there they would be, 365 word stories. The motivation? To see what would happen. In theory, turning out 365 words once a day in between other tasks and projects is no big deal. In reality, pinning down so many ideas and shaping each of them into something recognisably a story is quite a challenge. The fixed word count, my computer does the reckoning and grants hyphenated items single word status, is both a frustrating barrier and a useful restraint, much as the obligations of the sonnet form are simultaneously restricting and liberating to a poet. Beyond that, I may do what I like with the words at my disposal, provided I dispose of the superfluous ones. If I happen to get carried away and write 700 words, half of them must go. At what point does editing morph from judicious pruning into a massacre of the innocents? So, the days go by, the stories emerge. Sometimes early, easily and quickly, sometimes late at night after hours of struggle, and sometimes the vague shapes of themes and forms seem to loom around them. There are elements of myth and legend, outtakes from history and folklore, squibs and satires on our current insanities, songs and ballads in disguise, and things half forgotten passing like ghosts. There are perhaps patterns in what at first seemed random. There is, for sure, randomness at play beneath the word count. We are made of stories, all of us. Stories make us. But what do we make of stories?
Thank you. Wonderful. Now, the stories, however, were written last year and have been appearing daily online this year. There are only a few days left, folks, for this daily reading. Find it at 5dials, that's one word, 5dials.com/365. But you can also buy the book containing all 365 stories. The name of the book? 365, of course. And the author, remember, is James Robertson, published by Penguin. And if you want my recommendation for a Christmas book to buy for others or ask for yourself, then I recommend this. James Robertson's 365, even if you have to get in line to buy a copy, or even if you have to get online to buy it. So much for the secular, consumerist, and political aspects of the season. Now we move to the mythical aspects, not that Santa Claus myth, you can be sure. The mythic significance of this season must take into account the growing darkness all around us and the cold driving us inwards. We are taken to a place of growing desolation as we approach the solstice. The myths of this season recognize this desolation, this belly of the whale experience. But they also remind us that the desolation is not endless. Night will turn into day. The transformation can seem so hopeless, so impossible, that we need every reminder we can find from every wise man and poet gone before us. One of our modern wise men and poets is, of course, Dylan. And I'm going to play a song I'd never really attended to before. This Dream of You, from the 2009 album Together Through Life. It's sung with the voice of the older Dylan, rusty, tired, desolate, alive to the pain, but also alive to the hope. Some people see this as a love song, and yes, it's written in the love song mode, longing for the person addressed as you. But we're in the mythic portion of the show, and this song certainly lends itself to mythic meanings. It's not so much some woman he's dreaming of, but that divine light that we celebrate at this season, the light that seems unobtainable. But we hold on to this dream of you that keeps me living on. Here, let me read the words to you before we listen. That will make it easier, I think, for you to attend to the song. How long can I stay in this nowhere cafe for night turns into day? I wonder why I'm so frightened of the dawn. All I have and all I know is this dream of you which keeps me living on. There's a moment when all old things become new again. But that moment might have come and gone. All I have and all I know is this dream of you which keeps me living on. I look away, but I keep seeing it. I don't want to believe, but I keep believing it. Shadows dance upon the wall, shadows that seem to know it all. Am I too blind to see? Is my heart playing tricks on me? I'm lost in the crowd. All my tears are gone. All I have and all I know is this dream of you, which keeps me living on. Everything I touch seems to disappear. Everywhere I turn, you are always here. I'll run this race until my earthly death. I'll defend this place with my dying breath. From a cheerless room in a curtained gloom, I saw a star from heaven fall. I turned and looked again, but it was gone. All I have and all I know is this dream of you, which keeps me living on. And you might be surprised to hear the kind of music arrangement Dylan gives these lyrics, a kind of Tex-Mex upbeat embellished by David Hidalgo on the accordion. Attend to it now.
How long can I stay in this nowhere cafe? All night turns into day. I wonder why I'm so frightened of the dawn. All I is this dream of you which keeps me living on. There's a moment when all old things become new again. But that moment might have come and gone. All I have which keeps me living on. I look away, but I can't see it yet. I don't wanna believe, but I keep believing it. Shadow dance upon the wall. Shadows that seem to know it all. Am I too blind to see? Is my heart playing tricks on me? I'm lost in the crowd. All my tears are gone. Is this dream of you which keeps me living on?
There was Dylan's This Dream of You from Together Through Life. Another name for this season is Advent, the time of awaiting for the advent or arrival of that midwinter light shining in the darkness. Let's attend next to this beautiful Advent hymn, Rorati Cieli de Super, or in English, Drop Down Ye Heavens from Above. The hymn is basically a compilation of verses from the Hebrew prophets, mostly Isaiah, describing the present desolate state of the world and of ourselves. Thy holy cities are a wilderness. Zion is a wilderness. Jerusalem a desolation. Our holy and our beautiful house, where our fathers praised thee. We admit that we share a blame in all this, and are as an unclean thing, and we all do fade as a leaf. But the final verse brings comfort. In fact, the same comfort as many people know from the famous passage in Handel's Messiah. Comfort ye, my people. My salvation shall not tarry. Fear not, for I will save thee. Or as it says in Latin, and I love the rhythm of this word, consolamini, consolamini, populi meos. And the refrain, drop down, ye heavens from above, and let the skies pour down righteousness. Righteousness, or the righteous one. The translations can go either way. Come listen to the Franciscan monks of the Jesus Maria Clemente Monastery sing for us Rorati Caeli de Super. The words are in Latin, but you know what they're singing about. Just let it swell over you and feel the Advent spirit it brings us. Caeli de Super. Tell your friends tomorrow that you heard it here at Evening Under Lamplight on Community Radio in your city, Cambridge 105, with Robert Louis Abrahamson. But it's not just Advent. Today, the 16th, is also the first day of Hanukkah, the eight-day festival of lights, celebrating the miraculous occasion when the holy lamp in the temple continued to burn for a week until a new supply of oil could be sanctified. A light in a time of desolation. You know we sometimes bring in a Yiddish song or two, and here's a Yiddish Hanukkah song called Boruch Ate Zingt der Tate. The setting is the lighting of the Hanukkah candles. On the first day, you light the Shemus, or the head candle, from which you light one other candle. On the second day, the Shemus lights two candles, and so on, often brightly coloured candles to create a lovely cheering effect. But there's something more poignant than cheering in this song as the father lights the candles. There's a sense of wonder. Can we still experience a moment of holiness in this world of oppression and exhaustion after all we've been through? Here are the words. Boruch ata zingt der Tata. The father chants the blessing over the candles, beginning Boruch ata. And he lights the candles, and their light falls softly on his pale countenance. And a fire, holy and dear, shines in his eyes. And the weary one has straightened his arms and legs. And it seems, and it appears, there is still something here. Something has remained to love. Holy is this hour. Old sounds long gone. No, I hear them still. Sing then, Father, Boruch Ata, and I remain your child.
Boruch Ata, sing der Tate, ure sing die
That was the Peace of Heart Choir singing for us the Yiddish Hanukkah song Boruch Ata Zingt der Tata. Boruch Ata sings the Father. The Peace of Heart Choir came together shortly after 9/11 to promote healing, diversity, community bonding, and mutual understanding through music. They perform free of charge to social service providers such as area shelters, hospitals, hospices, elderly homes, and providers of services to the disabled. They say, "We believe that the power of music is universal. The music we sing reflects the ethnic, racial, and cultural backgrounds and traditions of our membership and audiences. Our goal is to leave audiences joyous." I hope that song left you too a little joyous. Heilig is die Schor, holy is this hour. And our hour is fleeing apace, leaving us just enough time to return to a bit of Walt Whitman's Song of Myself. This week I'm inviting us to attend to sections 14 and 15 of the poem. Section 15 is composed of a long series of short glances at various kinds of people to be found in Whitman's world of mid-19th century America. I'm going to break from the usual custom of reading the lines first. We'll talk a minute and then hear the lines. We skipped our Whitman visit on the last show, so it's been almost a month since we were here. At the end of section 13, Whitman had been outside, watching the birds and other animals, asserting the connection he felt with them, identifying himself, in fact, with the creatures of nature. He saw purpose in the way the flock of wood drake and wood duck, startled by his tread, rose all together and slowly circled around. "I believe in those winged purposes," he said. And he acknowledged that their red, yellow, and white colors played also within himself. He does not judge the animals except to praise them and to stand in awe of what they're telling him. The look of the bay mare shames silliness out of me. Now in section 14, he stays outdoors, again living close to the animals he finds there. The wild gander leads his flock through the cool night. "Yah, honk," he says, and sounds it down to me like an invitation. The pert may suppose it meaningless, but I listen closer. I find its purpose and place up there toward the November sky. In the moose, the cat, the chickadee, the prairie dog, the sow with her litter, the turkey hen, the same old law operates in them as well as in him. I am enamored of growing outdoors, of men that live among cattle or taste of the ocean or woods, of the builders and steerers of ships, of the wielders of axes and mauls, of the drivers of horses. I can eat and sleep with them week in and week out. What is commonest and cheapest and nearest and easiest is me. Me going in for my chances, spending for vast returns, adorning myself to bestow myself on the first that will take me. Not asking the sky to come down to my good will, scattering it freely forever. That last part requires a bit of examination. He adorns himself in whatever way we want to take that, in order to bestow himself on the first that will take me. No discrimination here. He does not pick and choose the person or people he extends himself towards. He has goodwill towards everyone, and does not insist that others must come down to him. He is ready to reach out to anyone, everyone. He's not asking the sky to come down to my goodwill. He's making no demands. He scatters his goodwill freely forever. Then follows the longest catalogue we have had yet in the poem, over 70 lines, running through a huge range of people of different occupations, different locations, different states in life. It's not a uniformly happy or pretty group of people. There is, for instance, the lunatic, carried at last to the asylum, a confirmed case. He will never sleep any more as he did in the cot in his mother's bedroom, which for Whitman had associations with his own brother, who was put away in a mental asylum. There is the person having his or her malformed limb amputated, and what is removed drops horribly in a pail. And the quadroon girl sold at the stand, the slave market. Whitman does not shirk these details of American life, and he resists inserting any moral comment in this catalogue. The mystic does not judge or condemn, but simply extends his heart and follows up with action when possible. Later, he describes a prostitute, obviously tired, a miserable outcast, jeered at and rejected by the respectable people. She's just someone that people use and doesn't give a thought to any kind of proper behavior. Why should she? Maybe it's morning and she's going home after a long night, draggling her shawl, her bonnet bobbing on her tipsy and pimpled neck. That detail of the pimpled neck always startles me, as perhaps it startled Whitman observing it. She curses back at those who are mocking her, and the crowd laugh at her blackguard oaths. The men jeer and wink to each other. And here's the one place where Whitman stops for an overt comment. Miserable. I do not laugh at your oaths, nor jeer at you. Of course not. He accepts her and recognizes their common humanity, as though he sees in her and in himself the same old law. And then finally, as the list slows down, the city sleeps and the country sleeps. The living sleep for their time and the dead sleep for their time. The old husband sleeps by his wife, and the young husband sleeps by his wife. And these, one and all, tend inward to me, and I tend outward to them. And such as it is to be of these, more or less I am. I took these words to heart the other day as I was walking down Petit Curie and standing in the market square and tried to see all the people I passed tending inward to me and trying myself to tend outward to them, trying to be more or less of them. And I noticed I was walking around with a silly grin on my face as I observed, without judging, without even lingering, the middle-aged woman carrying a McDonald's balloon. The guy looking at his phone and walking into someone else. The busker's tedious song and intrusive amplified music. Yes, a smile for him too, of course. And the two women walking past, one telling the other about the bargain she found earlier at that shop around the corner. And the screaming child, and the loud jokes of the three guys over there, and so on. I did not intend my smile. It just came as I tried imitating Whitman. Stop this day and night with me, he told us earlier in the poem, and you shall possess the origin of all poems. Clear and sweet is my soul, and clear and sweet is all that is not my soul. So give it a try yourself, and feel your heart open and your face come alive. Here's Whitman. The wild gander leads his flock through the cool night. Yah, honk, he says, and sounds it down to me like an invitation. The pert may suppose it meaningless, but I listen closer. I find its purpose and place up there toward the November sky. The sharp-hoofed moose of the north, the cat on the house sill, the chickadee, the prairie dog, the litter of the grunting sow as they tug at her teats, the brood of the turkey hen, and she with her half-spread wings, I see in them and myself the same old law. The press of my foot to the earth springs 100 affections. They scorn the best I can do to relate them. I am enamored of growing outdoors, of men that live among cattle or taste of the ocean or woods, of the builders and steerers of ships, of the wielders of axes and mauls, of the drivers of horses. I can eat and sleep with them week in and week out. What is commonest and cheapest and nearest and easiest is me. Me going in for my chances, spending for vast returns, adorning myself to bestow myself on the first that will take me. Not asking the sky to come down to my goodwill, scattering it freely forever. The pure contralto sings in the organ loft. The carpenter dresses his plank. The tongue of his foreplane whistles its wild ascending lisp. The married and unmarried children ride home to their Thanksgiving dinner. The pilot seizes the kingpin. He heaves down with a strong arm. The mate stands braced in the whaleboat. Lance and harpoon are ready. The duck shooter walks by silent and cautious stretches. The deacons are ordained with crossed hands at the altar. The spinning girl retreats and advances to the hum of the big wheel. The farmer stops by the bars of a Sunday and looks at the oats and rye. The lunatic is carried at last to the asylum, a confirmed case. He will never sleep any more as he did in the cot in his mother's bedroom. The juror printer with grey head and gaunt jaws works at his case. He turns his quid of tobacco. His eyes get blurred with the manuscript. The malformed limbs are tied to the anatomist's table. What is removed drops horribly in a pail. The quadroon girl is sold at the stand. The drunkard nods by the barroom stove. The machinist rolls up his sleeves. The policeman travels his beat. The gatekeeper marks who passed. The young fellow drives the express wagon. I love him, though I do not know him. The half-breed straps on his light boots to compete in the race. The Western turkey shooting draws old and young. Some lean on their rifles, some sit on logs. Out from the crowd steps the marksman and takes his position and levels his piece. The groups of newly come immigrants cover the wharf or levee. The woolly pates hoe in the sugar field. The overseer views them from his saddle. The bugle calls in the ballroom. The gentlemen run for their partners. The dancers bow to each other. The youth lies awake in the cedar-roofed garret and harks to the musical rain. The wolverine sets traps on the creek that helps fill the Huron. The reformer ascends the platform. He spouts with his mouth and nose. The company returns from its excursion. The darkey brings up the rear and bears the well-riddled target. The squaw, wrapped in her yellow-hemmed cloth, is offering moccasins and bead bags for sale. The connoisseur peers along the exhibition gallery with half-shut eyes bent sideways. The deckhands make fast the steamboat. The plank is thrown for the shore-going passenger. The young sister holds out the skein. The elder sister winds it off in a ball and stops now and then for the knots. The one-year wife is recovering and happy. A week ago she bore her first child. The clean-haired Yankee girl works with her sewing machine or in the factory or mill. The 9 months gone is in the parturition chamber. Her faintness and pains are advancing. The paving man leans on his two-handed rammer. The reporter's lead flies swiftly over the notebook. The sign painter is lettering with red and gold. The canal boy trots on the towpath. The bookkeeper counts at his desk. The shoemaker waxes his thread. The conductor beats time for the band, and all the performers follow him. The child is baptized. The convert is making his first professions. The regatta is spread on the bay. How the white sails sparkle. The drover watches his drove. He sings out to them that would stray. The peddler sweats with his pack on his back. The purchaser higgles about the odd scent. The camera and plate are prepared. The lady must sit for her daguerreotype. The bride unrumples her white dress. The minute hand of the clock moves slowly. The opium eater reclines with rigid head and just opened lips. The prostitute draggles her shawl. Her bonnet bobs on her tipsy and pimpled neck. The crowd laugh at her blackguard oaths. The men jeer and wink to each other. Miserable. I do not laugh at your oaths, nor jeer you. The president holds a cabinet council. He is surrounded by the great secretaries. On the piazza walk five friendly matrons with twined arms. The crew of the fish smack pack repeated layers of halibut in the hold. The Missourian crosses the plains, toting his wares and his cattle. The fare collector goes through the train. He gives notice by the jingling of loose change. The floormen are laying the floor. The tinners are tinning the roof. The masons are calling for mortar. In single file, each shouldering his hod, pass onward the laborers. Seasons pursuing each other. The indescribable crowd is gathered. It is the 4th of July. What salutes of cannon and small arms! Seasons pursuing each other, the plower ploughs and the mower mows, and the winter grain falls on the ground. Off on the lakes, the pike fisher watches and waits by the hole in the frozen surface. The stumps stand thick round the clearing. The squatter strikes deep with his axe. The flat boatmen make fast toward dusk near the cottonwood or pecan trees. The coon seekers go now through the regions of the Red River, or through those drained by the Tennessee, or through those of the Arkansas. The torches shine in the dark that hangs on the Chattahoochee or the Altamaha. Patriarchs sit at supper with sons and grandsons and great-grandsons around them. In walls of adobe, in canvas tents, rest hunters and trappers after their day's sport. The city sleeps, and the country sleeps. The living sleep for their time. The dead sleep for their time. The old husband sleeps by his wife, and the young husband sleeps by his wife. And these, one and all, tend inward to me, and I tend outward to them. And such as it is to be of these, more or less I am. And that's it for this evening under lamplight on Cambridge 105, with me, Robert Louis Abrahamson, and my special guest, Jenny Renton. Find this and other shows archived at momentsunderlamplight.com and get in touch at rla@momentsunderlamplight.com. And keep that hope for the light always alive as you wait in line or light the candles in the holy hour. Vigilate, stay mindful, as the Salisbury Cathedral Choir sing for us.